If you love building characters for Baldur's Gate 3, maybe especially if you want to play the game like Aang or Korra from the Avatar series, or want to be like a non-spellcaster controller, or even the most powerful weapon-using bard of all time, then you are especially gonna love this one. Welcome to D4. Hey everybody, so here at D4, each week we take a deep dive into character builds for our favorite role-playing games. Usually that means Dungeons & Dragons for me, but I like to theorycraft about builds, crunch numbers very often, not so that I can tell you the right way or the best way to play a character, but to explore one potential way to build something that is both really powerful, but also really fun to play. So if you enjoy creating characters for your RPGs, almost as much as you enjoy playing the actual game itself, or if you're just looking for tips or ideas on how to build something that you're thinking about playing, then welcome home. This is where you belong, and I am so glad that you're here. So thanks for watching. My name is Colby. I usually put out one build video a week on Tuesdays. So if you like what you see here, I would appreciate it if you would like the video, subscribe to the channel, comment, and even click on the notifications bell so that you don't miss an episode. Right, so I find myself continuing to just be in love with Baldur's Gate 3 and experimenting with crazy, fun, powerful builds. And I feel like I'm getting to a place now where I've covered a lot of the kind of more basic powerful builds, and I'm starting to explore just kind of the more weird and fun, crazy stuff, which is a kind of a cool place to be. But the reality is that each new BG3 video I put out gets a little less traffic than the one that came before it, which is fine and totally to be expected, I think. But it might just mean that I start to do fewer of these Baldur's Gate videos before too long and get back to mostly D&D content in the near future. We'll see. Also, I am considering doing a video where I incorporate mods. Most notably, I'm super curious to do a build for an Artificer, a class that exists in D&D, but not in Baldur's Gate, right? And then my favorite subclass to play in Dungeons & Dragons that does not currently exist in BG3 either, officially anyway, the Bladesinger. And yes, there are mods for both of these. I haven't installed them yet, but I think I'm going to at some point in the near future. Now, the only problem is not everyone plays this game on a PC, which means that they can't mod the game. And even then, most people who play on a PC don't mod the game, right? It can be intimidating for some people. So let me know if you'd be interested in seeing content like that, or if you'd like to see Baldur's Gate content beyond just, here are some more builds based on the vanilla version of the game. My tendency is to just stick with stuff that is accessible to everybody, because at the end of the day, this is my livelihood, and I need to do things that are going to, you know, garner views and stuff like that, right? So anyway, I'd appreciate it if you would share your thoughts. Okay, I'm gonna save any additional preamble for the individual builds themselves. Thus, I proudly present Baldur's Gate 3, episode number 7, The Avatar, Arachnophobia, and the Killer Bard. But before we get into the builds, I am thrilled you guys to have World Anvil as the sponsor for the video again this week. So listen, seriously, if you don't use World Anvil, you should probably change that as soon as possible. For those who don't know about World Anvil, they are the best software out there for DMs to build their homebrew world and for players to interact seamlessly with that world. For you world builders, World Anvil supports over 50 systems now. I swear it was 45 like 2 weeks ago, including D&D, yeah, and Pathfinder, but many, many more on top of that. I mean, they just added the Nykos RPG system to their database. I don't even know what that system is, but I'll bet it's awesome. Needless to say, if it's a TTRPG, it's probably supported by World Anvil. And I mean, seriously, it will even facilitate you creating your own system to work with their software. You could even publish your own rule set and corresponding character sheets in World Anvil if you wanted to. Or if you want to keep it just a little bit simpler, maybe you have some homebrew tweaks for your D&D campaigns, right? Things like it's only a bonus action to drink a potion, or maybe you've buffed monks in some way. Hooray! You can code that into your campaign manager in World Anvil. The freedom that it allows is just incredible. Not only that, but World Anvil makes it super easy to create wiki-style presentations of your world and your writing so that you can keep track of everything you build. They also have a fantastic interactive map builder that you can customize, and even chronicles that combine timelines with those maps so that you can plot and keep track of what happened where and when in your world, whether before your campaign started or as a result of what the players at your table do in your world. Presenting information with World Anvil is so easy. And yeah, speaking of players, World Anvil is for you too. It not only will make it easier than ever to access everything that your GM wants you to know about their world and campaign, but you can even build your character right from within World Anvil's site, regardless of the setting that your game is taking place in. It lets you keep track of hit points, spell slots, inventory, and has a user-friendly system for backstory creation, journal entries, and session note-taking. So please, do yourself a favor and go check them out. You will not regret it. Sign up for a free account, if nothing else, just to see what you might be missing. When you do, I would appreciate it if you would use this URL right here so that they know I sent you. I'll put a link in the video description, of course. And if you decide on purchasing a yearly subscription, regardless of the level that you purchase at, if you use the code D4 at checkout, you will save a humongous 40%. I'm constantly amazed at how big a discount they're willing to give. So yeah, take advantage. So, huge thanks to World Anvil. You guys are fantastic. And let's jump into the builds. Okay, build number one. I'm calling this one the Avatar. Do you guys love The Last Airbender and like Legend of Korra as much as I do?
Oh,
yeah, I do. Those shows are so good, and my kids love them just as much as I do, which makes them that much better. Are any of you excited and or nervous for the live adaptation? I think I'm a little of both. Anyway, unfortunately, if you wanted to play out that Avatar fantasy, that elemental bender fantasy in D&D, it hasn't really been easy for you to date. In D&D, the Way of the Four Elements monk is notoriously one of the weakest subclasses in what is commonly thought of as the weakest class in all of D&D 5e. Didn't stop me from trying to build an effective one at one point a while back, and honestly, I think we managed to do okay with that build. But yeah, without some homebrew, the class and especially subclass just suffers a bit mechanically. Fortunately for us, though, Larian has added their own homebrew rules to this lovely game, and I'm happy to say that the monk in general is a lot stronger, and the Way of Four Elements got some nice love as well. And so making an Aang or Korra-like elemental avatar bender is a lot more feasible and potent in Baldur's Gate than it is in D&D. You know, when I first started playing BG3, I kind of ruled out even trying a Four Elements monk, since after reading about all of the different subclasses, they still seemed the weakest to me. But after like building something in the lab and then testing it out in game, you could argue that the Way of the Four Elements monk is the most powerful subclass, if you build for it, and at least if we're talking about burst damage capabilities. So that is what we're going to be focused on for this build today. Let's get into the nitty-gritty. So at level one, let me scale back expectations here. The truth is, yes, you could totally make this build look and feel like a traditional Aang robe-wearing, dexterous, like mix of kung fu with elemental bending kind of monk character, no question. And it would work reasonably well. If we wanted to really optimize the character for damage, however, it's going to look a little different than that. Basically, I'd say it's going to be a little more Zuko, than Aang, for a couple of reasons that we will get into as we go. So for our starting class, I actually want to start the build off as a fighter. And for ability scores, I want to go a 17 strength, a 16 wisdom, and a 14 constitution. Here's the problem. Larian's version of the Tavern Brawler feat is just so incredibly powerful. And this build, believe it or not, benefits as much from the feat as any other build that I've done. That means that we get a lot more out of prioritizing strength than prioritizing dexterity on this character, as we'll explain. The problem is, if we don't prioritize dexterity, then our armor class is going to be abysmal, unless we wear armor. And yes, you can totally wear armor on a monk. It means that you will forego some of their abilities, really just one main ability, but you don't actually sacrifice all that much, especially in Baldur's Gate. I've promised in the past that I would make an armor-wearing monk, and so I guess today is the day that I make good on that promise. And yes, the only way to get proficiency with the best armor in the game, heavy armor, is by starting off at level 1 as a class with heavy armor proficiency. Thus, fighter. Alternatively, you could go paladin here or cleric subclass that gets it, right? It might make more sense even thematically, but eventually we are going to want another fighter level on this character anyways, so I figure it's most efficient to just start at level 1 as a fighter. Right. As for equipment, eventually we are going to want to get the best heavy armor possible, even a shield, and then just look out for any equipment that's going to add to our unarmed strike damage primarily. Alternatively, if you want a dex focused version of this build, you could do it, and then yeah, just be on the lookout for the best like monk clothing that you can get that's going to bump dexterity and unarmed strike damage and AC, etc. From the editing room, it strikes me that probably a lot of you are going to say this, so maybe I'll preempt it. Yes, there are like elixirs to give you a really great strength score, right? And elixirs last all day between long rests. So if you find a bunch of those and or get the ability to craft them and you want to instead kind of have your cake and eat it too, where you go high dex and dump strength, but then just drink elixirs to give you a big strength, or find gear that will set your strength at a certain point, right? Or there's items that will do the same for dexterity. So yeah, there's a way to be kind of both dexterous and really strong. And at that point, we don't really have to worry about choosing one or the other, right? Just wanted to throw that out there, as I'm sure many of you are thinking it. As a fighter one, then we get second wind, which lets us heal ourselves a little bit as a bonus action once per short rest. And then we get a fighting style. And I think I'm going to be taking defense here to add +1 to our AC. I'm not planning on using any weapons at all for this build, so we might as well bump our survivability. At level 2, while yes, we are eventually going to want a second level of fighter, I think, for action surge, right? And yeah, you could just get that over with now, but I would just as soon start beelining to our most important monk stuff instead. So I'm going to go monk 1 here. That means we get an armored defense that we won't be using. This just allows our armor class to benefit both from our dexterity and wisdom modifiers when we're not wearing armor or a shield, but yeah, for this build, I'm doing both of those things, so we don't need it. We also get martial arts at Monk 1, and unlike in D&D, there's actually no restriction on wearing armor or a shield for this feature, making it a lot less painful to be an armored monk in Baldur's Gate by comparison. We get several benefits from martial arts. Our monk weapon and unarmed strike attacks can use our dexterity modifier to hit and damage if our dex is higher than our strength, which ours isn't, so it doesn't benefit us. But also, our unarmed strikes do a d4 of damage instead of the usual just 1 damage, right? And that does scale with more monk levels. And when we take the attack action with an unarmed strike or a monk weapon, we can make another unarmed strike as a bonus action. Very, very nice. And again, not restricted if we're wearing armor. Monks also get ki right at level 1 as opposed to in D&D, and we get 2 ki points here, so we're a little ahead of the game compared to Dungeons & Dragons. From this point on, we get 1 more ki point per monk level, and they reset on a short rest. At the moment, we can only use those ki points for Flurry of Blows, which lets us make 2 unarmed strikes as a bonus action instead of the usual 1 that we can always do, right? What's more, we don't even have to take the attack action first in BG3 like we do in D&D, which can be pretty convenient sometimes, especially if we need to use our action for something else. At level 3, we would be a monk 2, and that means we get an armored movement, which again, we won't plan on using for this build. It tells us that if we're unarmored and unshielded, then we get an increase to our move speed of 10 feet. Fortunately, as a Way of the Four Elements monk, most of our damage will actually be ranged, so not having the move speed increase hurts a lot less than it otherwise would for other monk builds. We also get a couple of new ways to spend our ki at this level. Patient Defense lets us take the dodge action as a bonus action if we spend a ki point, which will cause enemies to have disadvantage on their attacks against us for a round. Not bad. And Step of the Wind lets us either dash or disengage as a bonus action instead of an action, again if we spend a ki point. Situationally quite useful, if annoying that we have to pay for it, unlike rogues. At level 4, we would be a monk 3, and that means that we get our monk subclass. And yes, like I said, we are going with Way of the Four Elements. So now our avatar training can begin in earnest. So, for those unfamiliar with them, Four Elements monks are basically a monk with spells, but they're really flavored kind of like elemental bending, frankly. Instead of getting spell slots, we have to spend key points on our spells, and the spells we get to choose from are quite limited. Most of them simply mimic existing spells in the game, so Blade of Rhyme is basically just Ice Knife. Fist of Four Thunders is essentially Thunder Wave with a cooler name, etc. If you were going for these spells and trying to build around them somehow, honestly, you're just going to be better off as a full spellcaster, in my opinion. Mechanically speaking, anyways. That said, there are three spells here that are actually unique to Four Elements Monks. All three of them also exist in D&D and, in my opinion, are the best spells available for Four Elements Monks. Fist of Unbroken Air and Water Whip, both of these do 3d10 bludgeoning damage, not bad, and then can push or pull or knock prone your target. Now, we get to choose three spells, and I think I would take both of these for the nice damage and enemy movement or prone effects. The big drawback to using these spells is that they both cost two key points. The third spell that I would definitely take here, and that we're actually going to be kind of building around and using as our primary key spender and damage dealer, is Fangs of Fire. This is also in D&D, but while Fist of the Unbroken Air and Water Whip are largely the same in both games, Fangs of the Fire Snake got really strong buffs. So, here's how it works. You spend one key point, and then it lets you make an unarmed strike, but from 20 feet away. But for just that single key point, you both get to extend the range of your strike and add a d10 of fire damage to it. In D&D, you have to spend two key to get both of those effects. There's also another nice bump here, in that when you use Fangs of the Fire Snake, your next unarmed attack does an extra d4 of fire damage. So yes, if you use it twice on a turn, your second one would get that d4 override, because they are considered, for all intents and purposes, as unarmed strikes. And the thing that really makes this so great is that once you get extra attack, you can do this twice on your turn for two key points, and when you add up all of the extra ways that we will be doing damage with our attacks, with our unarmed strikes, it really adds up to a lot of damage. Much better than, for example, spending those two key points to just do a flat 3d10 damage with those other spells, right? At least once we get to extra attack. Now, important to note, when you spend key and your action to cast any of these spells, it actually still triggers our bonus action unarmed strike, which is fantastic. D&D does this as well if you're playing with the Tasha's Cauldron of Everything book, but otherwise, just the vanilla Player's Handbook version does not, and that was a really big strike against Four Elements Monks back in the day. Four Elements Monks also get a cool little feature in Baldur's Gate called Harmony of Fire and Water, which lets you, once per long rest, regain half of your key points, rounded down, when you are outside of combat. So for those times when you are out of short rests, but you really don't want to take a long rest for some reason, it's a nice way to still get some key back. We also get Deflect Missiles at this level, which lets us use our reaction to reduce the damage done to us when we are hit by a ranged weapon attack. If we spend a key point, we can even throw it back, which is super cool, especially since in Baldur's Gate, that attack counts as an unarmed strike, meaning it benefits from everything that an unarmed strike benefits from for us. Finally, our martial arts die scales to a 1d6 at this level, meaning that, yes, both our monk weapon attacks, which we're not using, and our unarmed strikes now do a d6 of damage. At level 5, we would be a monk 4, and that means we get slow fall. This lets us use our reaction to reduce falling damage, and then we get our first feat. And like I said, we're going Tavern Brawler. I'm gonna be honest, I almost regret, almost, that this feat is as good as it is in this game, because it feels like a must-have feat if you are ever throwing or making improvised weapon or unarmed attacks. And when that happens, right, it sort of feels like it's actually taking away player agency and choice a little bit, and that never feels like great game design to me. Regardless, I don't want them to nerf it. In fact, I'd love to see them buff it so that it worked with dexterity too, if your dexterity was higher, so that I could make what felt like a true kind of Aang character, right? Anyway, yes, the feat is overpowered. It bumps our strength or our constitution, but we'll go strength by 1 to a nice even 18, and then tells us that when we make an attack with an improvised or thrown weapon or an unarmed strike, we get to double our strength modifier for both the plus to hit and the plus to damage. And that is, in a word, nuts. You will now almost never miss, even if you don't have advantage. And when you hit, you're going to hit a hell of a lot harder than you did before. At level 6, we would be a monk 5, and that means first up that we get extra attack, so now we can hit a hell of a lot harder twice on our turn. And yeah, if you can get in melee range, of course, you can even make unarmed strikes with your bonus action. two if you have the key for flurry of blows, right? So potentially four attacks on a single turn, each doing really big damage thanks to those fire damage bumps coupled with extra damage from Tavern Brawler. And we also get Stunning Strike at this level, which I don't know that we're going to be using a ton on this build, honestly. You have to actively select the ability in BG3 as opposed to in D&D and say, I'm going to use my action to Stunning Strike, right? Whereas in D&D, when you hit them, you can just say, oh, hey, I'm going to spend a key point and try and stun them. This means that you're going to have to choose between Fangs of the Fire Snake and Stunning Strike. And since the DC to resist it is based on our Wisdom modifier, which is good, not great, and the enemy gets to make a Constitution saving throw to avoid being stunned, I'd probably only use it if stunning the enemy was a lot more important than doing extra damage, and you felt really confident that the stun was going to stick. Now, at level 7, with extra attack secured, I want to get some goodies from other classes. You might decide to take Fighter 2 here for Action Surge so you could make potentially 6 attacks in a turn, blowing all of your key points in one glorious round even for massive burst damage. But I think I would prioritize a Warlock dip first, actually. Because see, Warlocks get spells at level 1 and just a single spell slot to use for that spell, but it resets on a short rest, right? And as a monk, we're kind of the short rest gurus anyway, so this pairs really nicely. And while there are sure lots of great spells to choose from, the one that I want most is Hex. Hex will debuff an enemy's ability check of our choice and then lets us do an extra d6 of damage to them every time we hit them. And we are hitting them a lot, so that's going to add up to a lot of extra damage. Now, the spell requires our concentration, and yeah, it costs a bonus action to first cast and then transfer to another target when our primary target dies, but I think it's really worth using, especially on this build, and here's why. At the time of this recording, at least, I'm not sure if this is working as intended or not, but when you hit an enemy with Fangs of the Fire Snake and they're hexed, it actually gives you a d6 once for the unarmed attack and then again for the d10 of fire damage if you hit them. So you're actually getting 2 d6 damage from Hex when you hit them with Fangs of the Fire Snake. And that's just awesome. I think it makes it worth a single level Warlock dip here. Sure, you could spend a feat to pick up the spell, but with as few feats as we get in this game, I would honestly rather spend a character level for it, especially since that's going to let the spell slot come back to us on a short rest. So if we can hold on to our concentration for Hex, which in Baldur's Gate lasts all day if we don't lose concentration, when we short rest, we're going to get that spell slot back, and then we could use it for like Armor of Agathys or something to increase our survivability. That's awesome. Don't forget, we actually get our Warlock subclass here at level 1. That's amazing. But honestly, I'm just going to say go ahead and pick your favorite here, PYF. I think I'd probably go Fiend personally to get some temporary hit points when I land a killing blow on an enemy. But those temporary hit points are based on our Warlock level and Charisma modifier, neither of which is great. So we're really not going to get much out of any of the subclasses. Honestly, maybe make your choice a thematic one rather than basing it on mechanics. But at level 8, with Hex in place though, yes, I think it's finally time to grab Fighter 2 so we can get that long-awaited action surge, letting us, yes, take 2 actions on our turn instead of 1 once per short rest. We will now be bursting with the best of them, potentially dishing out 16d6 plus 4d4 plus 48 damage when you add it all together for a total of 114 damage on average during a Nova round if we had Hex up and the key and the action surge to spend all on a single target, right? Not too shabby. So, at level 9 and beyond, from this point on with the build, I think I'd just go back to Monk. Grabbing another Warlock level for invocations and a second spell slot wouldn't be terrible. Grabbing another level of Fighter for a subclass wouldn't be terrible either. And of course, you could always go like 3 levels of Rogue to get Thief and thus 2 bonus actions on our turn for more unarmed attacks, right? But we sorely need more key points, I think, if we want to do more than just have one glorious round of combat, but be somewhat lackluster otherwise. And we do get some other nice benefits from more Monk levels as well, like making our unarmed strikes magical for the purpose of overcoming resistance, getting more spell options from 4 elements, evasion, stillness of mind to end charmed or frightened effects on ourselves, and ultimately, even another little bump to our unarmed strike damage. I think when I do my Monk playthrough, I'm gonna have a really hard time deciding between 4 elements and open hand. Both are just so fun and so powerful, and I just salivate at the idea of living my best avatar life in this game. I think I've got to do it. But anyway, on to build number two, arachnophobia, spoopy spiders. So, as I mentioned with the control freak build from my third Baldur's Gate 3 build video, controlling enemies is super powerful in D&D and still really powerful in Baldur's Gate, even if it is a little nerfed by comparison. What's more, though, it can be just a lot of fun to lock down and shut down your enemies with one character while the rest of your party just wipes them out at their leisure, laughing at your opponent's inability to be effective in combat. Here's my question, though. Is it possible to be a decent controller without relying on spells to control? In D&D, the answer is, I think, an unequivocal yes, thanks largely to how strong grappling is in that game, as I have tried to demonstrate with builds like the Street Fighter, for example. But in BG3, grappling just doesn't exist. You know what does exist, though? Some super powerful options to fill your party with spiders. Spiders who can lock down the entire battlefield by spinning their webs with abandon, letting your allies pick them off one by one. And here is how we get there. At level 1, for our starting class, I want to start this build off as a druid. Wild Shape is pretty low-hanging fruit, and it brings a lot of power with it, so let's get there first. For our ability scores, then, I'm going to say let's go 16 Wisdom, 16 Constitution, and a 14 Dexterity. And then for our equipment, we're going to want to get the best medium armor that we can find, and then either a really good ranged weapon or a really good staff, or both, I guess. We're not going to plan on using weapons that much, but sometimes you will get knocked out of Wild Shape or be out of uses of Wild Shape for whatever reason, so having a backup way to do damage via weapons is not a bad idea. As for the spells that we get at Druid 1, I'd just go, I think, with the usual suspects here. Entangle is a nice, like, poor man's web to try and lock down enemies with our concentration. Fairy Fire, though, might be an even better use of concentration for now, especially on this build, I think, because we're going to have web pretty soon. And yeah, Fairy Fire grants advantage to hit against anyone who fails their saving throw against it, so it can be great for your entire party. But at level 2, yes, as a druid, we get Wild Shape, and we can use it twice per short rest to transform into a beast from a select list. While transformed, we take on the beast's physical characteristics and stats, but keep our mental ability scores, Wisdom, Charisma, Intelligence. When the beast form gets reduced to 0 hit points, we revert back to our humanoid form, and we cannot cast spells while in beast form, but we can concentrate on spells that we've cast before transforming, though that can be problematic, as I'll explain in a second. We also are supposed to keep any abilities that we have from, say, other classes or our race, but that wouldn't be prevented from being used by the beast form. And while there are still lots of things that don't work like they should in beast form, it seems to me like Larian is getting better at fixing that, as again we'll discuss in a minute. Now, while all the beast forms have their benefits, we are going to focus on, yes, the spider form. Spiders get a venomous bite attack, which does some damage and then poisons the enemy if they fail their saving throw, meaning they will have disadvantage on attack rolls and ability checks. Nice. But then, most important for this build, we get the web ability as a spider, and this works basically like the web spell, which is a solid second level spell in that it covers a 15-foot radius area in sticky webs that count as difficult terrain, but also force a creature inside to make a dexterity save, or they get the enwebbed condition in this game, for up to 10 rounds. It prevents them from moving and causes attacks against them to be made with advantage, while attacks they make are made at disadvantage, so very similar to the restrained effect in D&D, right? It's a really powerful debuff, no question. But the amazing thing about webbing as a spider is that, first off, it only takes our bonus action to use it, and second, it doesn't require concentration, even though it lasts for a minute. Third, there's no limit to how often we can web, and yeah, you could use it multiple times, and the previous webs don't disappear until after a minute still, potentially letting you cover the entire battlefield in webs. That's kind of incredible. Now, one note. The spider form itself suffers no move speed penalty from webs, nor can it be enwebbed by its own webs, right? But that is not true for your allies, at least unless they have like special equipment or buffs that would prevent them from that happening, right? So this build would really work best in a party that was full of ranged damage dealers. The ranged bard that's coming up next, for example, or a nice Eldritch Blast focused Sorlock like I did in my very first BG3 video, right? Now, Druids also get their subclass at level 2, and I would probably go with Moon Druid here, I think. It's not necessarily a slam dunk, honestly. The other subclasses have some nice benefits. The main benefits to Moon Druid are Bear Form, which they get access to as a wild shape option that's unique among other Druid subclasses, right? Bear Form is a nice tanking and damage dealing form, but yeah, not something that we're focused on here. But then they also get Combat Wild Shape, which honestly, sometimes is great and sometimes not. It lets Wild Shape be cast as a bonus action instead of an action, but the problem is, sometimes you would prefer to have your bonus action, right? I wish they'd let you choose between either using your bonus action or your action like they do in D&D, but oh well. The main reason we'd want Moon Druid is for the Lunar Mend ability that they get. This lets us use a bonus action while wild shaped to spend a spell slot and heal ourselves for a d8 per spell slot expended. Spider is great for control, but they're pretty squishy. They only have a 14 armor class and 20 hit points. So having an ability to heal yourself so that you can stay in wild shape for longer will be important here. More important, I think, than the benefits that other subclasses offer. But at level 3, with wild shape secured, it's time to get, yes, more spiders. Which means that we are going to need some ranger levels, so we would be a ranger 1 here. Now, at ranger 1, we get favored enemy and natural explorer, which basically give us some skill proficiencies and or a spell and or resistance to an elemental damage type. I usually say on my ranger builds to just PYF here for both, but for natural explorer, we, of course, have to go with Beast Tamer, because that lets us learn the Find Familiar spell. And guess what one of the familiar options is? Yep, spider. Now, this little familiar spider only gets 6 hit points, so be careful with them. But they make a nice little distraction and a scout, and can also potentially poison enemies with a little damage, so yeah, free spider. At level 4, we would be a ranger 2, and that means we get first up a fighting style. I'd probably go with archery here. I mean, our plan is to be in spider form as much as possible, so no style is really going to impact us that much in that case, but if and when we get knocked out of spider form and have no more wild shape uses left, sure, might as well increase our hit chance with a ranged weapon, I think, since our dexterity isn't fantastic, right? Alternatively, if you wanted to, at that point, focus on being primarily a spellcaster, go ahead and take the defense fighting style to increase your armor class by 1. We get ranger spells at ranger 2 also, so while there is a lot of overlap between ranger and druid spells, there are some that are unique to ranger, so let's grab those. Ensnaring Strike to potentially ensnare your enemy with a weapon attack. Hail of Thorns for a small AoE damage option. The classic Hunter's Mark is not a bad spell. It's similar to Hex. It lets you do an extra d6 of damage to an enemy that you hit with a weapon attack. The problem is, it uses our concentration, and sure, we could cast it at the beginning of combat, but again, since Moon Druids can only wild shape as a bonus action, it means that if we did so, we wouldn't be wild shaping until round 2. It's just kind of wonky, and for other reasons too. When we hit the enemy when we're in wild shape form, it's not counting in Baldur's Gate as a weapon attack, though they're technically using natural weapons, right? So we don't get the extra damage. And then finally, once our target dies, we should be able to transfer it with a bonus action even if we're in wild shape form, but it's currently not allowing for that in game. So until they fix all of those things, I would concentrate on something else. At level 5, we would be a Ranger 3, and that means we get our Ranger subclass, and in case you hadn't guessed yet, yeah, we're going Beastmaster. I kind of can't believe that I haven't used Beastmaster in any build yet, since it's sort of like the quintessential Ranger archetype, right? Running around with your Beast Companion. I mean, it's kind of too bad that Gloomstalker is so strong that it basically overshadows everything else. Overshadows, get it? But still, there are some great things that you can do with Beastmaster, and honestly, the way summons work in this game, in general, just make them a lot stronger, in my opinion, than in D&D. In D&D, when you have summons, you often have to use your own action or bonus action to command creatures, and that's just not the case in this game. It simply makes a new character that shares your initiative, and then that creature just kind of does whatever you want it to without you having to spend any resources to make them do so. That alone makes them super valuable and really gets the action economy going in your favor. So yes, Beastmasters get to summon an animal companion, choosing from a nice list of potential options, and the best part about that for this build, of course, is that one of those options is a cute wolf spider. Ugh. So nasty. Yes, I am an arachnophobe. Anyway, that wolf spider functions very similar to our own wild-shaped spidery self, including the fact that they too can cast web, though it costs them an action to do so as opposed to a bonus action. Otherwise, that web works pretty much the same as it does for us, letting us cover the entire battlefield in webs a lot more quickly now and efficiently. They also get the same venomous bite that we do if they don't want to web as their action. But the one big difference is that they do an extra d6 of damage to our hunter's marked target, thanks to the Praise Scent ability. It almost makes up for the fact that we do zero damage with Hunter's Mark when we're in wild shape form, but yeah, again, I'm not going to use Hunter's Mark until they fix how wild shape interacts with the spell. And I mean, even then, this build isn't made for damage, right? If you're interested in doing more damage, probably just go straight ranger and, you know, maybe tack on some rogue levels or whatever. We are here for the battlefield control. I would rather start combat in humanoid form and throw out entangle or fairy fire and then wild shape as a bonus action, webbing with my pet on round one, and then I start webbing on round two. This character is built to just make everyone else's life better and easier. At level six, we would be a ranger four. That means we get a feat, and I think we ought to bump wisdom with it. It doesn't do a lot for us in wild shape form, but it will increase the likelihood of our spells sticking on enemies, and increase our healing as well. At level 7, we would be a ranger 5, and that means we get extra attack. And this kind of surprised me when I was testing this build in game, but yes, if we get extra attack, it does apply to our wild shape form, letting us attack twice in spider form now, as it should, right? And that's fantastic. We also get second level ranger spells here, and I'd probably just go with like lesser restoration for a nice cure all. Pass without trace is a big stealth buff for your entire party. Maybe spike growth for a new concentration option just to make life that much more miserable for your enemies on the battlefield. More importantly, as a beastmaster at this level, our pet gets some really nice buffs. Companion's Bond increases our pet's armor class and damage rolls, and actually their attack rolls as well, thankfully, though the tooltip doesn't say that, meaning that Beastmaster companions scale similarly to how the primal companions from Tasha's Cauldron of Everything scale, which is way better than the companion options that we get from the original player's handbook for D&D. Our spider's even going to get a dexterity bump and an upgraded visual look, which is a nice touch. Good job, Larian. Best of all, though, the wolf spider at this level is going to get a new ability, Cocoon. This is so powerful. Barring a dexterity save, when we use our action to cocoon an enemy, they are prevented from moving or doing anything. It's kind of like being stunned. It breaks if they take damage, and they do get to make a strength save at the end of their turn to try and break out, but it's a pretty powerful single target control option. And the best part is, just like with web, there is no limit to how often you can use this. You can use it on multiple enemies, a different one each turn. So potentially now we are using our pet's action for cocoon every round and our own to web, and the enemies just hate us so much. So from level 8 and beyond here on this build, I think I'm just going to take more ranger levels, largely to continue buffing our pet spider. We could optionally go druid levels instead to get more and better spells, and then at druid 6 we get primal strike so that our spider attacks are considered magical for the sake of overcoming resistance, among other things. But yeah, have fun with this character just making life miserable for your foes, you disgusting little eight-legged freak. Okay. On to build number 3 for the day, the ranged bard, the killer bard, or as I like to call them, the all-singing, all-dancing crap of the world. Name that movie, one of my favorite moments from that show. So good. Now, when I did Will's build in that first optimizing the companions video a few weeks ago, I kind of learned about the fact that swords bards, and particularly slashing flourish, are a little broken in BG3 at the moment, and I promised then to do a ranged bard build very soon. Well, today is that day. And yeah, between what I think is a broken slashing flourish and how powerful hand crossbows are in this game, we can make a really monstrous damage dealer who can sing and dance and woo all while cutting their enemies to bits with some crazy high ranged weapon damage. Here's how I'd build it. At level 1 for our starting class, yes, we're just going to beeline bard here. for ability scores, I'm going to say, let's go 16 dexterity, 16 charisma, and then a 14 constitution. For our equipment, we're going to want to get the two best hand crossbows that we can in game, and the best medium armor that we can get, at least eventually. So yeah, in case you had forgotten, or maybe never knew, in Baldur's Gate 3, you can dual wield hand crossbows, and unlike in D&D, I mean, you could do it in D&D as well, but in that game, you need a free hand to reload crossbows, right? So dual wielding them doesn't work all that well. I guess in Larian's world, like, I don't know, these hand crossbows must just come with like a little magazine of crossbow bolts and like some sort of semi-automatic feature built into them. Kudos to whichever artificer figured out that design. So yes, that means that just like any other one-handed light weapon, if we have one in each hand, we can use our bonus action to fire the one in our offhand every round, right? The only difference being that if we don't have the two-weapon fighting style, at least, we don't get to add our dexterity modifier to the damage from that offhand weapon. Not a big deal, as something we will be remedying eventually. As a bard one, then, we get Bardic Inspiration, which lets us three times per long rest, and as a bonus action, give Bardic Inspiration to one of our allies so that they could then roll a d6 on an ability check, an attack roll, or a saving throw to hopefully succeed at something they might otherwise fail at. It's just a wonderful ability, and everyone in your party is going to love you for giving it to them. Of course, before too much longer, we'll probably be using them selfishly to increase our damage, so you might want to get another bard in your party. We also get spells at Bard 1, and I'm probably just going to go with like the Bard usuals here. Vicious Mockery is just really funny, more than anything. Insulting your enemies with some really finely crafted insults to do a little damage and then impose disadvantage on the enemy's next attack if they fail their save against it. Healing Word, of course, feels like a must-have for a ranged bonus action heal. Tasha's Hideous Laughter is fantastic single target control. And yeah, I'd probably grab Fairy Fire to get easy advantage against potentially multiple targets. The other spell I would consider using here is Bane. I haven't talked much about this spell in my Baldur's Gate videos, but it's sort of the anti-bless. It debuffs enemies who fail their save against it so that they have a minus d4 to all of their attacks and saving throws. And considering that the saving throw that the enemies have to make is a charisma save, most enemies are probably going to fail here. So you should strongly consider using it. At level 2, we get Jack of All Trades, which lets us add half of our proficiency bonus when making a skill check that we are not proficient in. And then we also get Song of Rest, which essentially gives us one more short rest per day, making your monks and warlocks and fighters everywhere, and especially your avatar characters, who are all three, love you so much. At level 3, we get Expertise, and I'm just gonna say PYF here. I'd probably go with Athletics and Perception personally, but our build doesn't really depend on it, so you know, pick whatever feels best for you. Maybe Persuasion if this is your build for your Tav, right? We also get second level Bard spells here, and there are a lot of great options, of course. Cloud of Daggers for some nice persistent damage with our concentration, Hold Person to potentially paralyze a humanoid, Heat Metal can be really great for damage if you cast it on an enemy wearing metal armor, as it's just going to burn them every single round. Lesser Restoration, of course, is a nice support option. Nothing here that we're necessarily going to be using in combat, so again, PYF. But most importantly, we get our Bard subclass at this level, our College, right? And yes, we're going with Swords Bard. Swords Bards are, I think, my favorite bards, at least in this game. Maybe in D&D as well, actually, though Whispers would probably be a close second. And of course, Eloquence is amazing. Anyway, as a Swords Bard, we get medium armor proficiency, so be sure to equip that medium armor now. And then, yes, the wonderful and fantastic Blade Flourishes. Blade Flourishes, as I've said, function kind of similar to Battlemaster maneuvers. We get to spend a use of our Bardic Inspiration, if we want to enhance our weapon attacks in one of three ways. Defensive Flourish makes a weapon attack that, if it hits, adds both our Bardic Inspiration die and damage, and then increases our armor class by a flat 4. Until our next turn. It's a nice defensive option. Mobile Flourish pushes your target a massive 20 feet away if it hits. It's kind of crazy. Kind of makes me want to focus on like using Cloud of Daggers, right? To like push people into or through it. Not a bad option. I do wish it would let us control how far they get pushed. In D&D, it's up 2 feet usually when you have a push option. In Baldur's Gate, it's just a flat amount every time, right? Anyway, with Mobile Flourish, we also get to teleport to the enemy after we've pushed them without having to spend a reaction or a bonus action or anything. That's nice in a melee build, not really necessary for us here. And then finally, yes, Slashing Flourish is going to be our bread and butter and is way better than it is in D&D. It just straight up lets us make two attacks. Now, in melee, it kind of gives you like a little AoE where you're hitting two targets so long as they're standing next to each other. But if you're using a ranged weapon and you use Slashing Flourish, you just get two attacks to whoever is in range. And yeah, again, I can't imagine this is working as intended, but you can just make both of those attacks against the same enemy if you want. And both of the attacks add our Bardic Inspiration die in damage. We would then get a third attack with our bonus action, offhand hand crossbow, yeah? Meaning three attacks for us here at level three. That's, again, kind of crazy, feels broken. I wouldn't be surprised if Larian fixed it in a future patch, but until then, enjoy that crazy power spike. Swords Bards also happily get a fighting style here, and even though they only get to choose between two fighting styles, one of them is exactly the one we want, two-weapon fighting, which, yeah, lets us add our dexterity modifier to our offhand attack now. Woo-hoo. At level 4, we get a feat, and there is no way that we are not taking Sharpshooter here. One of the best feats in game lets us add 10 flat damage to our ranged weapon attacks at the cost of a minus 5 penalty to hit, and unless you're going up against really hard to hit enemies, it's pretty much always worth using. Be sure to have someone in your party who can bless this character. They are going to need all the help they can get landing their attacks, and they hit like a truck when they do. Now, level 5 is such a huge level for us, primarily because of all the benefits to our Bardic Inspiration. Improved Bardic Inspiration bumps our Inspiration die to a d8, and then also gives us one more use of Bardic Inspiration. So we have 4 now instead of 3, but even better, Font of Inspiration causes those Bardic Inspirations to reset on a short rest now instead of a long rest, so we are just going to be laying waste to our enemies from afar every single short rest, and it is just glorious. Then we even get 3rd level spells here, so if you really want to be the do-it-all character, I mean, Fear, Hypnotic Pattern, lay down some crazy serious control, and then pump out insane damage, all while having support options and being a fantastic face for your party, this character can truly do it all. At level 6, as much as I'd like to get to other classes, we have to take just one more level in Bard, because as a Swords Bard, yeah, at level 6, we finally get extra attack. And yes, this means with Slashing Flourish and our bonus action, we would potentially be making 5 attacks against our enemy, all of them with that extra 10 flat damage from Sharpshooter, and most of them with an extra d8 from our Inspiration die. And I mean, if someone puts haste on you, 7 attacks at level 6. You're just going to melt everything. But at level 7, now that we've got extra attack and our Bardic Inspirations back on a short rest, yes, let's take some detours. First up, a level in Fighter. I know I'm banging the same drum a lot here, but honestly, the main reason for doing this is for the archery fighting style. A plus 2 to hit from that fighting style is a big deal when you're getting an automatic minus 5 to hit on all of your attacks, right? So much so that, yeah, sure, you might have wanted to start as a Fighter 1 on this character. I mean, you might as well grab the heavy armor proficiency, or at least maybe at this point respec, right, to be a Fighter 1 first, and then Bard 6. We also get Second Wind, of course, as a Fighter 1 for a little self-heal bonus action once per short rest, so don't forget to use that when you need it. But at level 8, I actually don't know that I would go for Fighter 2, surprisingly. I mean, sure, Action Surge would be great, but I really want Rogue levels, and I think most of you know why. Okay, fine. The reality is, I probably would grab Fighter 2 here, but then respec once I got high enough to be able to go Rogue 3, right? Anyway, as a Rogue 1, we get Expertise again, awesome, so pick your favorite skills, double your proficiency in those as well now, and yeah, we are a pretty dang good skill monkey on this character. We also get Sneak Attack as a Rogue 1, which is going to let us add a d6 of extra damage once per round, unfortunately, when we make an attack with either a ranged or finesse weapon, which we are, and against an enemy that we either have advantage on or who is standing within 5 feet of one of our allies. We should be able to get this to trigger pretty reliably, and a little extra damage bump, we'll take it. At level 9, we would be a Rogue 2, meaning we get Cunning Action. This lets us use a bonus action to dash, disengage, or hide instead of an action, and we will be making great use of that throughout the rest of our career, I'm sure. But at level 10, we would be Rogue 3, And that means we get our Rogue subclass, and as I'm sure many of you have predicted, we would be going Thief so that we could get, yes, Fast Hands. Which gives us two bonus actions now, every single round. Which would, yes, allow us to get two Sharpshooter-infused hand crossbow attacks with our offhand now, for a total of six per turn if we're using Slashing Flourish. And that's without Action Surge or Haste, just every round, so long as we've got the Bardic Inspirations to use it. That's crazy. Also, our sneak attack damage goes up to 2d6. Very nice. At level 11, sure, go fighter 2. We get action surge, so yes, now we would potentially have 10 attacks in a single round, once per short rest, right? Because when we use Slashing Flourish, we're getting two attacks with every single attack. And with extra attack and action surge, we have four. So for us, eight. Plus two more for our two bonus actions. And yeah, because of this, you might have wanted to go action surge before rogue, and if so, that's fine. Better burst damage, but lower sustained damage. You make the call. And finally, at level 12, I think I would take Rogue 4 here so that we could get a feat, so that we could at least get our dexterity up to 18, right? Now, the truth is, of course, there are a lot of ways to get our stats higher in this game. I'm not going to spoil them if you don't know them, and oftentimes this just comes to us through gear. If it weren't for that fact, I might have prioritized getting our dexterity higher sooner. But the reality is that you'll probably be at a 20 dexterity with this feat, if not much sooner in game. So I'm not that worried about how low our ability score is, to tell you the truth. And thus, yeah, if you already have a 20 dexterity, at level 12, you might just want to go Bard 7 instead to get 4th level spells, right? Anyway, yeah, that does it for this build. They are truly the all-singing, all-dancing crap of the world, and I love them. And unfortunately, that is all that we have time for today. I know I used to do 4 builds per video, but I'm finding that for some reason, I'm having a hard time fitting more than 3 in and keeping it under an hour. I know, I talk too much. My apologies, but I still love you guys. Thank you for all that you do for the channel, and particularly a huge shout out to my channel members. I really couldn't do this without you guys. So everyone, if you enjoy these videos and or want to get a written step-by-step guide to help you recreate the builds without having to go back and rewatch the video or take notes, then I would really appreciate it if you'd consider joining as a channel member. There's a little button down there, and for just a couple bucks a month, you get access to the library of write-ups that I do for each of these builds, and it really does a lot to support me financially. So again, thank you. Regardless, I hope you have a fantastic day today and a really great week, and if you don't, I hope that you will hang in there, but I also hope that you stay safe and that you are kind and that I see you again very soon. But until then, take care. Bye. Oh, I'm being followed by a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow. Leaping and hopping on a moon shadow, moon shadow, moon shadow. And if I ever lose my hands, lose my plow, lose my land. Oh, if I ever lose my hands, oh, I won't have to work no more. Oh, I feel like fall is totally like Cat Stevens' time to shine. Never do I have a stronger desire to listen to folk music than in the fall, I think. Oh, you guys, I just finished like booking the details of a trip that I'm going to be taking in a couple of weeks. I'm going out to visit Kelly and Monty, the Dungeon Dudes, in Toronto. Gonna hang out with them in their hometown, do some stuff in their studio, taking my wife. We're gonna just hang out and have fun, and I am so excited. In fact, this video comes out, I might be there when this video comes out. Or is that the next week? Anyway, it's happening soon, and I can't wait. I'll try and like go live, I think, when that's happening, just to kind of be like, hey, hanging out with Kelly and Monty, woo. Yeah, that'll be fun. Well, don't say that. How rude. Don't say that. Spoopy spiders. Well, I don't need to say that. Don't say that.